The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
There's a kind of an expression in English that some people say sometimes. Maybe you said it, or some equivalent. How did I get here? How did we get here? And sometimes in the midst of stuff, life, midst of our active mind, it's like, you know, maybe we don't even know what's going on, but we kind of know what's going on. But how do we get here? How do we get to this junction? How do we get to this kind of stuff? When the mind is calm and settled, then it's possible to see things as they arrive, as they come. So it's one thing to think about, well, how do I end up thinking about this? How am I supposed to solve this problem? And, you know, what's the right solution now? And what am I supposed to follow my breath now? Am I supposed to notice the thought? What am I supposed to do, you know? As opposed to sitting calmly and peacefully and watching something arise, like a thought arise. And in the seeing it arise, see that there's a kind of a healthy separation or freedom or independence from what arises. There's the awareness and there's the arising of something. And that distance, that freedom or that independence is very important, because then you don't you could see that you have a choice, perhaps, whether you get involved or you stay free of it. And so seeing the rising of something is very important. So at the end of the sitting, I asked you to notice the difference, if you could. Maybe it wasn't relevant for you. But the difference between having a thought arise versus engaging in that thought, involved in thinking. Could you discern a difference between those two things? And what could you describe that? Someone would like to describe?
The thought comes and it's gone.
So,
you get involved, it takes
a while. So when the thought arises, it just arises and passes, is much shorter. But when you get engaged, it continues for some time. You fuel it. Yes.
If I follow the thought, what I first noticed is that I wasn't as in tune with the nuances of breath or body. And as soon as I be aware of, I'd lost a little train there, then I realized I was in, even if I hadn't locked on to what the thought train was, there was something that was pulling me away from my breath or my body.
So there's an engagement with the thinking pulls you away from having contact with the body, with what's going on here. And, good. Anybody else? Carol?
If I get engaged in a thought, I find there's more energy within the body, somewhat of a tenseness.
Uh-huh.
It's definite
so
energy level difference.
So the energy goes up, there's more tension. Is that energy restless or agitated energy, or is it smooth sailing energy?
It depends on the thought.
Okay, more energized state. Okay. Marcy?
The difference in not suffering and suffering.
Difference between suffering and not suffering.
Just picking up on both of those, and for me, the energy was very different, but I felt it when I was, I guess, about to get caught up in the thought as a very contracting, tension, fear, probably not wanting to get caught up in the thought,
uh-huh.
But feeling the impulse to do that.
Uh-huh. So you can feel. So that's interesting. So you feel tension or fear or contractedness that comes with the engagement,
yeah.
Or fear about the engagement, but also you felt the impulse to get involved.
Yeah.
And so is there a difference between having a thought arise and the impulse to get involved? there a difference?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, because sometimes a thought will arise and I won't feel the contraction around it. It'll just bubble up and I won't follow it. But when I feel I'm about to follow it, there's this...
So the impulse to follow it comes with a contraction, tightness.
It seems all inseparable, and I don't quite understand exactly how.
Great. This is great. Yeah. Thank you. Anybody else notice the difference between having a thought and the impulse, or the gravitational pull, or the magnetic pull, or the something, the drive? Isn't that interesting? And so the drive or that impulse maybe has no thought connected to it in and of itself, perhaps. You know, just this, you know, locking on or something. Anybody feel that there was a closing down or a darkening of awareness or narrowing of awareness when you got involved in your thinking? Yeah.
It felt like God is trying to walk in there as opposed to a more open, spacious feeling that far in my head.
So there's a band of locking tension in your eyes area when you're trying to get involved in some kind of thinking. Good, this is all good to see all this. So this is, I think, very useful as we go along and we go into the afternoon to have this little bit as a background for what we'll talk about in the afternoon. Yes?
Can I ask a question, please?
You talk about the mind, and to me that's an abstract concept. And do you make a difference between the mind and the brain? Because in my meditation, when the in-breath comes up, it's like the brain. And when you said that metaphor of the leg,
yeah.
I picture my brain actually like a muscle getting really heavy,
right,
and soft and just lying in that brain pan. But it's not, I don't know the difference between mind and brain here.
Yeah, it's a hard one. I don't know. It seems the brain is kind of has a big deal to do, a lot to do with what we call mind, but a lot of people don't want to limit the mind to just the brain. And some people feel the mind is here in the heart area. That's where it seems to be activated. Some people say it's in all our nerves, it's all over the body. Some say the mind isn't localized. The brain is localized, the mind is not localized. So what is that supposed to mean? And so the mind thing, you know, what is the mind? But I'm curious, because you're German, right?
Yes.
Once this woman from Germany moved to America, and she said one of the great surprises in learning English in America was the English word mind. She claimed in German there was no word like that.
That's very true.
That's true. Isn't that interesting?
So that makes it hard for us.
Yeah. So we think we know what we're talking about. And it takes someone coming from Germany to say, what are you talking about?
Maybe the Pali word would communicate more directly.
Mm. The way the word citta sometimes is translated as heart or sometimes as mind. Citta. So we can find a, it'd be interesting to find a German Pali dictionary. And see how it's translated. Chitta. Well, she's. You still use chitta in Hindi?
Marathi.
Marathi. So, oh, here we have in Japan.
There's a brain research scientist from Harvard who had a stroke, and her left brain was put out of commission by the stroke, and she entered into what she described as a nirvana-like state, where she was just feeling her cells flowing with the universe and her energy flowing with the universe and pure sensory sensations. And it was completely silent, no mind chattering from the left side. And so it was kind of like a death experience. She felt like it was a death experience, like her spirit had yielded to her death. And it was wonderful. It was a glorious, glorious experience. And she willed herself to come back to teach everyone about this difference between the left brain and the right brain. So she's written a book, and mm-hmm. I think it's very interesting.
Great.
I just bought the book. I was reading it last night, but I can't remember the name of it.
You've let go of your left brain already.
Extraordinary. So it gave me this whole other slant on meditation, that we're just trying to react, we're trying to activate the right brain, rather than this more, yeah. It brought it kind of down to earth for me. For me. Mm-hmm. What's that?
Down to earth. Brought it down to earth for him.
Yeah, just. And she has exercises for, you know, just sensory exercises to
beautiful.
Activate the right brain.
Beautiful.